We're living in a very risk-averse society, which is driving me nuts. I think we're killing this nation with how risk-averse we're getting. Because a true breakthrough requires tremendous levels of risk. My name is Peter Diamandis, and I'm the chairman and CEO of the XPRIZE Foundation, but run a number of other companies. I'm chairman of Singularity University, co-founder and managing director of Space Adventures and Zero G, and chairman of the Rocket Racing, and I'm a 9-year-old kid having fun. I have wanted to fly into space since childhood. I was a kid born in the 60s, grew up with Apollo, and bought the story that all of us would have a chance to fly into space. And frankly, the pace at which we had been moving in the 60s should have given us that capability. But the race against the Soviet Union basically ended when we landed on the moon, and politicians gave up on that vision of the future, and technology really died off very quickly. And I realized that my chances of becoming an astronaut were 1 in 1,000. And so that wasn't my vision. My vision of flying into space is like a scuba diver. When you want to go scuba diving or mountain climbing or whatever your sport is, you can go and do it. So I made a commitment to myself after going through medical school and getting my engineering degrees that I was going to do it privately. And the original XPRIZE, the Ansari XPRIZE, was an effort to build a private spaceflight industry that would allow all of us to go with our own hard-earned money and explore this frontier. So opening the space frontier, for example, with the Ansari XPRIZE, it's 2003. We've got 26 teams around the world who are building private spaceships to carry you and I up into space. And the realization is that the rules and regulations in the United States don't allow for private spaceflight. They allow for one-way, expendable launch vehicles. They don't allow for vehicles to re-enter, and they don't allow for people to buy tickets. And so I have to go to the FAA administrator, Marion Blake, and say, Marion, we've got a problem. The Ansari XPRIZE for spaceflight, we've got teams about to start competing, but they can't compete in the United States. They're going to have to go to Mexico or Canada or Russia to go and fly their vehicles. And much to her credit, she said, well, we'll have to change that, won't we? And so the rules and regulations to allow for, round-trip travel and what I like to call, carbon-based payloads, you and I, to go had to be created. So a lot of breakthroughs run into regulatory structures that are inflexible. And sometimes it's not about the technology, it's about changing what the regulations allow. And as we open up space, that's going to be more and more the challenge. So how do we allow people to really innovate, take risks? One of my companies, for example, is a company called Zero Gravity Corporation. We have a couple of 727s, and we take people up into weightless parabolic flight. A couple of years back, we flew Stephen Hawking, the world's expert in gravity, in zero-G, and that was a really amazing experience to see this man that's been wheelchair-bound for 40 years float freely in the zero-G airplane. Now, NASA's been doing zero-G flights for the last 40 years, since the late 50s. They were flying people in zero-G airplanes. And in 1993, myself and another colleague, Byron Lichtenberg, who had flown 2 shuttle missions, and I walked into the FAA, and we said we would love to take the public, the paying public, up for zero-G flights. And we're going to put 35 people in the back of the airplane, unstrap them from their seatbelt, put the airplane up into a 45-degree climb, push it over the top, and they'll float out. And they said, you want to do what? It isn't going to happen. And literally, the legal structure that we'd formulated, there was no place in the rules and regulations of the Federal Aviation Regulations that would allow this to occur. And I remember the conversations I had with the lawyers that basically said, where in the regulations does it allow it to happen? And my answer was, where in the regulations does it disallow it to happen? And we've gone from a society where if it's not explicitly prohibited, it's legal, to a society where if it's not explicitly allowed, it's illegal. And that's a very dangerous shift. It took us 11 years to get approval from the FAA to do this. It was battling the regulations all the way. Overregulation for a new field means, dead at arrival. The early days of aviation was one that a lot of risk was taken, and consequently a lot of lives were lost. And people were willing to risk their lives for that which they believed in. In 1919, a Frenchman, Raymond Ortega, had been born in Paris, moved to New York, became an entrepreneur, started as a busboy, eventually owned two hotels. He loved aviation and saw what it could do in war and wanted to use it in peacetime, so he offered up a $25,000 prize for the first person to fly between New York and Paris. And that $25,000 Ortega prize was ultimately what motivated Lindbergh to cross the Atlantic in 1927. And it's what ultimately motivated me to create the X Prize. I read about the Ortega Prize. I had no idea that it had existed. I read about it in Lindbergh's memoirs called The Spirit of St. Louis. And I was making notes, and I realized, oh my God, this $25,000 prize caused nine different teams to spend $400,000 to win the $25,000. And the most unlikely guy to win it was Lindbergh. Lindbergh literally had been flying the airmail for a number of years. No one would even sell him an airplane or an engine because they were scared that he would crash and give them a bad reputation. But in 1927, May 20th, he takes off Roosevelt Field. He lands 33 and a half hours later in Le Bourget. And the fact that he did it was not the coolest thing. What was the most amazing part of the Ortega Prize was that between 1927 and the end of 1928, 18-month period, the number of passengers in the United States went from 6,000 to 180,000. It was a 30-fold increase in the amount of passenger travel because this dramatic demonstration of Lindbergh, this young aeronaut. Today's regulatory structure, going back, 80 years into the early teens and 20s, would have effectively shut down the experimentation days of aviation. There's a challenge when you're giving birth to new industry. If it's a new industry that is dissimilar to anything that existed before, like the dot-com revolution was, and there aren't the regulatory structures there to plug them into, those industries have a period of very rapid growth that is unregulated. And revenue begins, people start figuring out how to make it into businesses. That was true of aviation, that was true of the dot-com revolution. And then, once serious business comes online, then government comes in and sees where the faults are and starts to regulate. But there's a real constituency there. The challenge is when you're giving birth to a new industry that looks like something else, and you try to apply existing regulations for an 80-year-old aviation business to a 5-year-old commercial space business, then you've got a challenge because you don't have the chance for the real growth and experimentation to take place. The reason that we have an aviation industry today is because there wasn't regulation in the early days of aviation. Had there been, we would never have had the number of flights to learn. So what happens is if you're allowed to take risk early on, you can learn, you can have failures, you can recover from those failures and continue. And you learn through the process of doing. To cause the true breakthroughs that we need to go into space, it's a requirement to take risk. We don't know what's going to work. We're looking for breakthroughs. And in society today, we're living in a very risk-averse society, which is driving me nuts. I think we're killing this nation with how risk-averse we're getting. Because a true breakthrough requires tremendous levels of risk. The day before something is truly a breakthrough, it's a crazy idea. If it wasn't a crazy idea the day before, then it wouldn't be a breakthrough, it would be an incremental improvement. So computing on silicon when you'd be using vacuum tubes was a crazy idea. But where in society today do we allow for this risk to take place? Large government programs don't take them because they're worried about congressional investigation. Large corporations are worried about their stock price plummeting if they fail. So it's really in the entrepreneurial sector that people are willing to risk their lives, risk their fortunes, their reputations, to do something they fundamentally believe they can do. And when they take that level of risk, then there is the chance for amazing breakthroughs. And that's where it starts to really become fun.